Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm your host, Ara, and my co-host, my intrepid co-host, is away this week at E3, as many of you may or may not know. So I'm sure he's right now getting drunk at some kind of crazy party, and hopefully he'll call in, and maybe we'll hear from him. Joining me today are two guests. We've got Todd here.
How you doing?
And we've also got Ken.
Thanks, Ara.
And Todd and Ken are both game industry professionals, so we should have some pretty cool conversations going on tonight. And let's get right into it. If you guys want to call in, you can call us at 866-536-1100. And you can also check out our chat rooms if you want to go online at www.chatterboxers.com. We've got a chat room going there, and unfortunately, I can't see all you guys in the chat room tonight, but I'm sure you guys are having a fun party over there or whatever. Anyway, let's see. So this week's E3 week. So as is usual with E3 every year, even though it's much smaller this year, we've got a big announcement from Sony, and that's that their price drop. They're dropping their console by $100. And I thought this was really interesting because I was looking around online and I found a bunch of interesting quotes from different, you know, execs, important people, stuff like that. And they're all kind of like saying different things. So, you know, Jack Tretton, what is he? He's like the CEO of Sony, right? So in the CNN news story, he says, our initial expectation is that sales should double at a minimum. So I'm like, wow, Jack, that's kind of optimistic. There's an analyst who's kind of infamous named Michael Pachter for Wedbush Morgan, and he says that Sony's price reduction would not double sales, but may boost them by 50% to about 120,000 units a month. Okay, there's this other quote that I thought was kind of funny, which was from the Konami boss over at, I think it's actually Konami of USA.
Mm-hmm.
But and he said, I wonder if Sony can win back user support by the price cut of just $100. I don't expect a substantial impact. With $500, you can buy a personal computer. So I don't know about what you guys think, but I don't know. Personally, I'm kind of in line with the Konami boss.
I'm not going to buy one for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not going to buy one either. I don't know. What do you think, Todd?
Nobody I know is going to go buy one, even with the price drop. Nobody I know is going to go buy one because... even with the price drop, $100, it's still more expensive than comparable consoles. So
that's like two games, right? If you're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. We've got a caller on the line, Michael.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
Hey, Ara, how you doing?
Hey, not bad. So you've got a comment here about the Sony price drop?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good move, if not a little maybe tardy.
So are you going to go out and buy like 12 PS3s right away?
You know, there's like a 10% like increase of interest for me, but there's a huge personal reason for that, and that's just because my brother is feeling very charitable and told me he would either buy me a Xbox 360 or a PS3 in the near future. So a free console, and I just have to decide which one I want.
So which one do you want?
I want more games on the 360, but, you know, the PS3 is the more expensive one. So if I can get him to shell out for the more expensive one,
right,
that's bonus for me.
Well, you get a free Blu-ray player, you know, from your brother. That's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, and, like, if you look at, like, the Amazon deal, which I don't know if you guys saw that, but you get the free movies, but you also get the free remote, and you don't pay tax. So, I mean, those are nice perks.
That's tax on $500. That's good savings right there.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe that's why all those sales on Amazon.com are up so much.
From what, Charitable Brothers or the free remote?
Well, I don't know. I mean, because you don't pay taxes on it. Because what is that? I mean, like at 10%, that's $50.
Oh, right? Yeah,
so
very
it's
true.
Like, that's big money right there. It's kind of interesting, though, because I always, you know, it seems kind of crazy to me that Sony is pricing their product so high, because it just seems like they're just pricing it right out of the market. But somebody told me a really good point the other day, which was that, well, you know, it's the Blu-ray player, right? I mean, you can't really get a Blu-ray player for any cheaper than that, can you?
Not really, no.
So I think that they're maybe like trying to do the same thing that they did when the PS2 came out, with like, oh, they have a, you know, a decent DVD player, and it's kind of like your proxy for a DVD player, because a whole bunch of people, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, back then, they bought their PS2s, a lot of them, because it was a nice DVD player.
Right, but they were going from VHS, which was, you know, these big chunky tapes, to really nice DVD,
right.
So it doesn't really compare now.
Yeah. So,
also,
I mean...
Go ahead.
No, it's all you.
You know, I think maybe they're also... They could be, like, having some big announcements this week, and, you know, maybe they have some, like, you know, big game exclusives that they're going to announce, and this is just kind of the 1-2 punch, you know?
So well, maybe I sure
the price
so.
Drop is just the taste, and then, like, they seal the deal. You know, I'm being optimistic here for them.
Well, didn't they do that last year? They announced all their exclusives last year, you know, Metal Gear Solid 4, Final Fantasy 13. These are all exclusives that they've announced and are hoping are going to boost sales. But if the game isn't out, there's no point in having the console. So
yeah.
I don't know what they could have up their sleeve this year, but it'll be interesting to find out.
Well, they also lost a lot of those exclusives, so they really have to, you know, recoup and announce some new ones. Otherwise, there's really nothing to entice people over from the Xbox 360 side of things, which is a lot of their demographic anyway.
Well, right. I don't think they have the market penetration right now to convince developers to continue developing for their platform exclusively. Even Konami is considering, you know, multi-platform development at this point. So
yeah, those comments today weren't very reassuring.
No, not at all.
Well, pretty much. I mean, it seems like a lot of developers are trying to shy away from doing exclusives, right? I mean, it seems to me anyway that it's rather expensive to just develop exclusively for one console.
Well, yeah, it's the financial gamble. I mean, you know that, you know where you work, and you know that company wants to make as much money as possible, right, Ar?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, if you do the simple math, you know, if it costs $15 million to $20 million to make a, you know, A-level game, or even more, you know, you have to sell 1.5 million to 2 million units just to, you know, kind of break even there to, you know, have it make sense. So, not many games sell that much, and... I don't know, how many games were released last year? 500, 600?
Yeah, the pressure is definitely going up. And I don't know, as far as like PS3 goes, it's like I just don't have any games I want to buy. And really, I mean, like, I'll balk at the price, but if there was really a game that I wanted to play, I would probably buy one.
And I feel the same way.
I think there's a lot of people in that boat.
You wouldn't wait for the price to drop again, you know, a year later? Get the game then?
Well, it just depends on if there's something I want to play and if I want to play it bad enough, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I wanted to play Oblivion a few weeks ago. I was like, oh, I got to go get Oblivion, right? And there was this Craigslist ad out there, and this guy was selling it. And I was like, okay, I'll see if this guy will sell it to me. Because you know that, you know, they'll sell it to me for like $35, and the game stores are charging like $60. And even if I buy it used at a game store, it's like $55. So I was like, oh, let me see if this guy's still selling it. And then I replied to his ad like on a Sunday morning, and it's like Sunday 4 p.m. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to wait for this guy anymore. I'm just going to go buy it. And he, of course, he emails me after I come back. But he was like, yeah, you still want it? And I'm like, no, I just went out and bought it. So I totally wasted $25 there. But I know. It's just how bad you want it, too, you know? So it's like, I don't think people want the product that bad, which is just kind of a shame.
You know, the bottom line with the PS3, I think Sony felt like their hand was forced maybe a year or two early, and that left them on the high side as far as price goes.
Well, there you go. If you guys want to call in, 866-536-1100. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. where we spend every week talking about video games. And before we get down to the real business, I wanted to mention UAT, the University of Advancing Technology. Alon went there, and now look where he is. He's at E3 getting wined and dined left and right. So you should go there, and maybe you'll get to go to E3 and stuff like that. And actually get in the games business and do real work, too. Anyway, I've got Todd and Ken here with me. And what I wanted to talk about this segment was a really interesting news report I saw on the web. This is from NBC. And I was actually really, really floored when I saw this because this is a news report about violent video games, but it's not the usual stuff that you hear every time in the news when you see somebody mention violent video games. They're actually saying in this report that there's a study where, believe it or not, violent video games pose little risk. So I was like, wow, this is interesting. And, you know, I read a little further, and there's this research study done basically with about 1,200 seventh and eighth graders. So these are like 12, 13, 14-year-olds who play video games all the time. And this psychiatrist, Dr. Cheryl Olson, says, we found that most boys in this age range are playing mature-rated video games. So this idea that M-rated games cause shootings or major violence just doesn't hold water. And I'm just really, really happy to see a story like this because, you know, not because video games, you know, are something that, like, I'm a proponent of and that it suits my agenda, but mostly I'm just happy to read this because this kind of report is more of an accurate reflection of, I think, what societal effects games are really having, which is not that much. You know what I mean, guys?
Yeah. I did some research, and every couple of years they announce that video games have done better than movies have in the box office and that kind of thing. And I also wanted to look at the crime rate. So since 1996, let's see, the video game dollars were $3.5 billion, and it's gone up to $7.3 billion now. So that's nearly doubled. And if you look at the violent crime rate in the United States, according to the FBI, it's dropped by more than half since 1993 till about the same time, 2003. So also, I found statistics from the FBI about juvenile arrests for homicide in the United States from 1993 to 2003. And they've gone from 3,300 arrests down to 800 arrests per year.
So basically, you know, violent crime is just going down.
Yes, and you would expect it to go up because video game sales are going up and it's nearly doubling, so you would expect them to nearly double if there was any kind of correlation, but
clearly there's just no correlation whatever.
And it might be argued that it can, you know, maybe it's a viable release for people to, you know, get their aggressions out, or maybe they're just got something to do on a Friday night instead of hang out in front of the liquor store and breaking into cars or something.
I think that's what this study here is implying. Do you have something you want to say?
I was just going to say it's interesting that juvenile crime rates have gone down. You don't have
time to rob stores when you're trying to, you know, get the glass armor in Oblivion and, you know.
The glass armor?
Yeah, or, you know, the Daedric shield.
Or steal Lamborghini in Grand Theft Auto.
Right, or yeah, I mean, you know, any one of those. Or just walk around the street and fake
beat people with a baseball bat.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, the thing that always gets me is that, you know, every time this topic, except for now, gets on the news, you know, you just see some talking head telling you about how the violent games are destroying our society, how they're murder simulators, you all know who I'm talking about there. You know, teaching kids to kill and all that stuff. And these guys always come out of the woodwork after some kind of tragedy because they can point to something physical and say, see, it was the violent games that helped the kid, you know, do this violent act or this horrible thing. And, you know, if you really don't know any better, which is really like most people who are listening to the news, you know, if you're not a video game player, then you just take what these people say at face value. And at that point, it's just like sensationalism and rhetoric that you're listening to. And that's taking center stage, and you're just in this bizarre world of, like, paranoia. And, I mean, it's not that dramatic, guys. You know, this is sensational news. It's not that big of an effect.
Well, yeah, and what's more, a sensational story, you know, some kid, goes shoots up his school, or juvenile homicide arrests are have dropped by fivefold. What's sexier?
Yeah.
What's going to make you scared and watch at night?
Yeah. The thing that I thought was really the most interesting thing is that, you know, what's happening in this country that I think most people don't want to admit, at least in the public news and stuff like that, is that, you know, and I'm going to repeat what I read before, but I think it's really important. Most young teens who are well under 17 are playing M games, and they're fine. You know, the ESRB doesn't want you to know this. The game companies don't want you to know this. The paranoid, you know, Jack Thompson types don't want you to know this. But, you know, all this is happening because of basically just like the natural market dynamic and consumer demand. You know, whether we feel that it's best for them or not, you know what? All these little kids, these 12, 13, 14-year-olds, they're playing the M games.
But now there's a difference also between playing and also, like, you know, if you look at the best-selling games, they're not necessarily – you know, Grand Theft Autos. They're not all Grand Theft Auto clones in there. It, you know, the top 10 games, only two are particularly violent. One was, you know, Grand Theft Auto, obviously.
Right, right. That's definitely true. I mean, it's not like that's all they're playing, but my point is, like,
they're exposed to it and they're not harmed by it.
Right. It's like, it's really, you know, if you look at the media, they're framing it as, like, it's just like this weird underground thing that should be stopped. And if you look at what it really is, it's, but they're just playing. They're playing them all the time. You know, the kids are getting these games, and there's really, like, there's nothing that, you know, any of these, like, consumer watchdog groups or, like, whatever, you know, legislators, and short of actually passing laws that work, I guess, can do to actually stop them. But this, you know, the system's broken and it's failing for what it's supposed to do.
Well, I think it's interesting that almost any time you hear about video games in the media, there's violence involved. Even though violence is only a small part of the industry,
right.
there's plenty of other games out there.
The other thing too is that, you know, every time you hear about one of these shootings and that, you know, say, oh yeah, they found, you know, Doom or Quake or something like that on their home computers and that, and you know, if you stop a kid for jaywalking across the street or stop a kid who's, you know, eating an apple, chances are he's going to be playing video games at home too.
Well, it's interesting. Recall when the PS3 first came out and 360 first came out, there were a lot of stampedes and even people robbing people at gunpoint and so on and so forth. Wasn't there a time in the 80s, maybe in the 90s, early 90s, where people were being robbed for their shoes, like their tennis shoes?
They're
Michael Jordans or Tickle Me. Yeah. In any case, you didn't see anybody going after the shoe companies and telling them, stop making shoes.
Well, it's all about just like image and distortion, and, you know, it's about like, you know, what kind of frame is the media projecting, right? And it's often not an accurate reflection of real life.
Well, they're trying to make, you know, they're in the business to get people to watch their show.
Right, so they're going to make up stuff and make them exaggerate them more than it really is. And this happens, like, people should really just, you guys should take everything with a grain of salt because, you know. Anyway, we got a caller on the line. We've got Howard here. Howard, you're on the air.
Awesome. How are you doing, guys?
How's it going, Howard?
Good.
So what do you think about this video game violence, man? Do the video games make you go out and beat people up or what?
Oh, every Thursday, you know. I mean, it's no rotate. No, I mean, absolutely. I completely agree with it. The media often just blows it out of proportion just to make a point. I mean, quite frankly, it's games are the hot thing now, so it's their normal scapegoat, you know?
You know what I've got to say that really ticks me off? I don't know how many of you guys read the video game blogs, like, you know, Kotaku and I don't want to single them out, but pretty much all of them, they are so sensationalist, it's not even funny. They'll put up a headline, and they'll say, like, oh, this, and something else. And when you read what they're actually saying, it's like almost nothing happened. I mean, like, you've seen that, Howard, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, of more recent, because I think... Well, particularly Kotaku, I mean, they're trying to garner a little more audience. So, or any of the kind of up and coming sites, they really want to make their mark. So they say more than what they kind of mean, you guess.
Right. Yeah. So it's kind of annoying.
Maybe we should do that.
Well, you know, pretty much everybody should do that because apparently, you know, life's not exciting enough as it is. But we've also got Matt on the line. Matt, you're on the air.
What's up?
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going pretty good. You know, it seems to me that with these the violence against video games and whatnot, I really kind of wonder why they don't crack down against movies a lot more and that kind of thing.
Yeah, hey man, can you hang on a little bit? We'll talk to you after the break.
Oh, sure.
Right on. All right, we'll be right back in a few minutes, guys.
Me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I've got Todd and Ken with me here in the studio. And we're talking about the perennial topic, video game violence, but specifically how, yes, studies now are actually finding out that violent video games actually don't do too much. We've got a caller, Matt, on the line. Are you still there, Matt?
Yeah, I am. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Pretty good.
All right, so what's your take on all this?
This seems kind of silly to me. I mean, over the years, kids have been dealing with, you know, the violent movies and whatnot for I don't know how long, and while games are more interactive, I don't see there being a whole lot of difference in the mediums.
So you don't think that, you know, the fact that you're actually going through the actions of, you know, let's say, I don't know, like killing space aliens or Nazis or people on the street makes
Well, I can't really see pushing the X button as accounting as going through the actions. And even with the Wii's motion control, it's not really going through the actions in a lot. I mean, you're still playing a video game.
Right. Have you, what about, like, you know, have you seen that guy in the news, Lieutenant Dave Grossman? He goes around saying how, like, shooting video games are murder simulators and stuff like that.
No, we've all been hearing that kind of wild stuff for quite a while, but I can't really see it being anything truthful.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that one.
Well, you know what, though? You know, he says they are simulators, and he's exactly right. It's, you know,
well,
it's not
are.
Real.
Yes.
It's not real.
Yes,
it's pretend.
But it's not teaching you to, you know, actually fire a gun. You know, I mean, you know, we've covered this on the show before, but, like, you know, I don't know how many of you guys have fired a gun, but it's absolutely nothing like firing a video game gun.
Mean it's nothing like pressing a button?
No, it's absolutely nothing.
You gotta pull the trigger, gotta hold it, you gotta aim.
Right, obviously.
Even with a light gun game, you're not looking at anything anywhere near actual firearms.
Totally.
You know, I think one difference between games and movies and television, and that is, movies and television is one way, the stimulus is coming in, you have no release, you just sit there and vegetate and you take it all in, whereas when you're playing a game, you can do something to kind of let that out and do something with it rather than just, like, sit on it.
Yeah,
so I think there is a little difference there.
If you're having that kind of delusion that's making you into some kind of murderous freak, you've got problems already, and I don't think video games are going to be what keys it in the first place. Could have been anything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, like I said before, you know, I think that it's mostly just, you know, press having the interest of just being sensational instead of, you know, reporting something accurately. So you get, like, these distorted viewpoints.
Well, so my question in all of this, so what about the video games? Where are the parents? Who are the parents that aren't supervising their children and paying attention to what they're
doing? Well, obviously they don't care. So
obviously,
you know,
it's like a great scapegoat. It's something new. It's not something that's got a big precedent from back to the early 1900s. It's something new they can make fun of or attack to try and blame the problems on.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, I mean, really, you know, the other thing I think it is that, you know, a lot of people don't understand video games. You know, I mean, like, we've had an interactive media in our life for what, you know, since the late 70s, to be, you know, as, you know, at best, right? And it's like a lot of people, you know, the biggest detractors of games, as far as, like, whether they're good or bad for you or whatever, are the same kinds of people who don't play games. I mean, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, I'd really love to hear from somebody who plays games all the time and is like, yeah, you know what, these things are going to, you know, mold, you know, impressionable teenagers into killing machines or something like that.
Well, you know what? Actually, you know, if you think about it, TV ratings have been dropping, you know, over the same time period that video games have been going up and video game usage. So people are spending, you know, 10, 20, 30 hours, you know, kids spending 10, 20, 30 hours a week playing video games. They're not spending that 10, 20, 30 hours watching TV. You only do one of the two at the same time. So, I don't know, maybe there's a little hidden agenda there.
There you go. You got anything else for us, Matt?
Not a fan, no.
All right. Well, I really appreciate the call.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. So, I don't know. You guys have anything more to say on this subject here?
The only thing I have that... Pretty much. The only question I have is, you know, if video games don't influence violence, I'm wondering why Ari, you punched me in the head during commercial break.
Well, you know, I mean, I just got to keep...
I think it was very accurate.
I got to keep my guests in line. You know?
True, okay.
All right, so let's move on here. Here's another topic that, like, just kind of, like, seems to come up in the media from time to time, and it just, like, it comes up and everyone makes a big mess over it, and then it goes away and everyone forgets about it. But I think it's relevant. I don't think we've talked about this before. There was a Washington Post article on the state of video game journalism recently. I think it was actually today. And basically, you know, I don't know how many of the gamers out there know this, but, you know, a lot of game reviewers, especially the ones who do this professionally, you know, who get paid for it, they regularly get treated to very extravagant trips and gifts from game companies. I used to be, you know, part of the video game press for a few years, and, you know, they would put us on these trips that we call junkets, right? And, you know, like, when I was working at this magazine called Tips and Tricks, you know, the companies would take me to, like, a racing school when they had a racing game come out, and they'd have...
Oh, that was Accolade,
like,
wasn't it?
So actually, that was Namco. Like, Namco had the best trips, but...
that explains a lot about your car.
There you go. I mean, like, they had, like, they put us into a...
They gave him a car?
No. They didn't give me a car.
No, he just likes to drive fast.
But, yes, they did instill in me the desire to drive excessively fast. You know, they're, like gun shooting schools. They also took us to, you know, there was a Grand Theft Auto 3 event, you know, back when that game came out. Then there was, like, you know, there's other, when the Ace Combat 4 came out, you know, Namco did another event where they took us on these, like, mock air combat battles where they put us in, like, these trainer, you know, they're not actually jet planes, but they're real planes, and we got to, like, you know, they're two-seaters, and we got to steer them around and, you know, doing all this crazy stuff. And basically, the point is that, like, you know, the press get treated very, very well, and they get put on these trips that are really more like vacations than, like, meetings or press trips per se. And, you know, the story that, you know, this Washington Post story didn't really say a lot specifically. Like, they didn't come right out and say, like, you know, oh, you know, how could the press accept, you know, all of these, you know, trips and what amounts to essentially gifts from publishers when they're you know, reviewing their games, right? Because clearly there seems like there's a conflict of interest there.
Well, I think what they're trying to buy is they don't trash you and, you know, just totally trash a game that's, you know, not so good, say, or, you know, could have been improved or that kind of thing. But I just wonder how different this is than, you know, some of the other industries where, you know, I don't know if movie reviewers get, you know, taken, you know, to Cannes or anything like that to go watch, you know, premieres or anything, that kind of thing. But I do recall when Hummer did their first introduction of the H3 over by the JW Marriott, there had to be 40 Hummers driving around. It was a big press event, and they're flying in from all over the country, obviously, to check out the H3 for the first time. So, you know, I just wonder how different it is from, you know, other industries. I'm not defending the practice, but right. I'm just, you know,
no, I don't,
I'm wondering why
I don't,
they're singling out video games.
I don't think it's different at all. And, yeah, I don't know. That's a really good point because, really, you know, if this is done to, you know, movies and if this is done to, you know, like the car press, which I have the impression that it is. I don't have specific knowledge of it, though. Then, yeah, I mean, you know, everyone...
Well, they give them cars to go, you know, flog on a track for, you know, days and stuff. Like, you know, like, oh, gee, okay, yeah, I'll take the Ferrari and I'll take it to the track. Okay, right, twist my arm.
But they are, I mean, you know, you have to have the car to review the car, right? I mean,
sure,
if you have,
right,
you know, if they just gave you the game, the car just happens to be outrageously expensive.
And it's totally boring. There's no fun in all of,
none,
you know.
None at all.
Yeah. So,
does it seem like this topic only comes up about this time of the year when E3 is going on?
I don't know. Maybe it does, because I remember, like, last year, you know, there was, like, I don't know, some other article about it.
It's kind of funny because E3 this year isn't, you know, the extravaganza that it was last year. Supposedly, I wouldn't know because I'm not there right now.
Right.
But.
Well, neither would I. But, yeah, actually, let me tell you guys what's actually really pissing me off about this article. Here's a quote that I found. This guy, let's see. Okay, I don't even have the author here. Okay, so I've got all my stuff together. He said, but do events like these things just by good reviews? Nah, says Mike Riley, a New York-based reviewer. If he wrote positively about a game that was a stinker, he would lose his credibility and eventually his audience. And there's a quote from this guy that says, the reason why I got invited is I have readership. The only way that I keep readership is by staying honest, by calling it how I see it. And I just think that that's total BS, because, I mean, you can always claim that you're calling things how you see them.
And, definitely.
And, you know, and the readership really, I don't think has any idea whether you're being honest.
Who is that, Roger Ebert? I'm sorry?
There you go. All right, we'll be back in a minute, guys. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm your host, Ara. Alon is away at E3, and instead, I have two very wonderful guests. We've got Todd and Ken. And actually, we are all video game professionals, and we're coming to you here tonight from the balmy South Phoenix. All right, so let's get back into it. I wanted to mention again, UAT, University of Advancing Technology. Alon went there. You should, too. And it's a school where you can learn about game design and all kinds of good stuff. And I hear also that, you know, a lot of game studios recruit from video game schools, too. So if you're into that sort of thing, go and pay them some money, and hopefully you'll learn something. All right. So what were we talking about last segment? We were talking about video game journalism and video game journalists getting... Actually, I don't really like to use that term. I'd rather just say video game press. I'm not sure why.
Isn't that a little bit pejorative in comparison?
You know what? He's allowed just, because that's where he's talking about his roots there.
All right.
He's allowed.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. Somehow the word journalism just seems a lot too highfalutin for what the activity is. Anyway, how they ostensibly, you know, get bought off or don't get bought off by going on, you know, all these trips, accepting all these gifts that, you know, companies send them from time to time. I should mention that, you know, there are some publications that will actually, you know, either A, disclose that, okay, well, we're reviewing this game and we've been, we've been treated by this company for X, Y, and Z. And there are also some publications that disclose, you know, we don't accept gifts from any of these companies or anything like that. My problem with this whole thing is that basically, you know, all of the press, you know, none of the press is going to admit that they're getting bought off. You know, like anybody who participates in these things. And of course, like, you know, while I was press, like, of course, yeah, you know what? Like, why would, I mean, like, you know, if a company is saying, okay, you know what, we're going to put you up in the Ritz-Carlton, you know, we're going to give you dinner, we're going to take you out to a nightclub, we're going to provide all these things for you, and yeah, you know, for a few hours in the day, you get to check out a game. Like, what am I going to say? No, I'm not going to say no. I'm like, sure, yeah, I'll do that. You know, I will eat your horrendously expensive filet mignon, and I will enjoy, you know, your nightclub treats and all that stuff. And you know, I will, when I go back to, you know, where I live and do a review of your game, I will be, you know, completely objective, and I'll just review the game, right? I mean, everyone's going to say that, but really, like, the problem I have with the thing is not because there's anything overt going on, because I don't think that there's anything overt going on. I just think that it's very subliminal. You know, they're not trying to, you know, get your... They're not saying, like, okay, we're doing this for you, right? So you could do a good review.
They're not trying to buy you off. They're trying to influence it a bit surreptitiously.
Right, right. And you know what? Guys, I mean, like, if you deny that that happens, then you're just full of it, because it happens. I mean, this is kind of like, you know, having a girl over for drinks and conversation when, you know, really you just want to seduce her.
Well,
you know,
one thing
it happens
that,
all the time.
Yeah, one thing I think is kind of funny is video game publishers or even us developers, sometimes we might give a little bit too much emphasis on, you know, the importance of reviews, good or bad, or that kind of press. And you know, I don't think if you polled 100 kids that one of them could name, you know, the actual name of a video game journalist.
That's a really good point. And actually, like, I want to get to that in a second because you're going down the exact same path I wanted to go down too. But before we get there, you know, what I want to say is, you know, there's a lot of pretense with these, you know, with these trips that the press go on. And the pretense is that, you know, well, basically what this Washington Post article said is, here's a quote from the vice president of marketing at Bethesda Softworks. They said, "What we're trying to accomplish with an event like this is to have the undivided attention of the important people in our industry that cover the industry. There's a lot of titles out there competing for attention." So, you know, the way they're framing it is, you know, yeah, you know, we're just trying to get noticed because there's hundreds of games or what have you. And, you know, we just want to have their attention because I guess press is incapable of giving attention unless there's, you know, a filet mignon steak in front of them or something. I don't know. But, you know, that's the way they're framing it. But, you know, what I think that they're doing is that they're just trying to, you know, not just stand out, but they're trying to have their game framed in the best possible light, right? So they use all of these distractions and all of these devices so that when you go back, you have as positive an impression of the game that they can deliver to you. It's like a psychological thing, right?
Right. But is it their fault for doing it or your fault for accepting it and going ahead and covering the game and you know, being influenced that way?
Would you want to buy your Halo game in a brown paper bag, you know, just dropped in there, or in a nice shiny foil?
Obviously, I want the shininess, right? But my point is that to say that you're completely immune to it, to being influenced, I think is just total BS.
Totally, yeah.
Oh, of course.
You know, so I mean, I don't think that there's necessarily even anything wrong with them doing it, as long as people just understand what it is, you know. But don't come up to me and tell me that you're immune to it. Because you're not. I mean, these are just psychological ploys that people use, you know, in every part of society, and it happens. Don't pretend it's not there, you know? Just like Judge Judy says, don't pee on my shoes and tell me it's raining.
But you were immune.
Yes, well, you know.
Yes, your journalistic integrity wasn't compromised whatsoever.
Right, so going back to what you said before, Ken, you know, yeah, I'm really kind of shocked that they're putting the companies in general put this much money and resources into treating the press. Because just like you said, yeah, kids don't really recognize the press. We have, you know, almost no real, like, press marquee names. I mean, you know, the ones that we do have, only real, like, avid gamers know, right?
Yeah, and they're usually the editors of the magazine, and, you know, they write a review, you know, once in a while.
Right. I mean, the biggest press names, I mean, you could name, like, big names in movies, and, you know, people off the street will know them. You know, big names in game press, people off the street will not know them.
Right.
You know? And well, something that was really interesting, I don't know if either of you guys saw this, but I think it was a couple years ago at a DICE convention. Somebody was giving a talk, and they displayed this chart. And it had game sales correlated with game review scores. And you know what the correlation was?
None.
Exactly. Absolutely nothing. The score that a game got had like almost nothing at all to do with their sales.
I did one for GBA games.
Yeah.
And I did find a correlation. I found a correlation with including a battery backup with review scores and with sales. And a battery backup on, you know, with the top 20 games, top 50 games did 100,000 units better on average or more. So
wow, that's kind of interesting.
So well, I suppose, you know, that's pretty strong. Save your strong. GBA.
All right, so, you know, either this guy giving the lecture was just totally full of S.
But I was looking at GBA. He's probably looking at console.
Or maybe he was right, and, you know, maybe this is the separate case with GBA, which very well may be the case, right? Because, you know, GBA is low-tech system, right?
Yep. So yeah, battery makes a big difference.
Right. So probably, like, sales, I think, in those cases will more correlate to the quality of the game than, you know, just a big budget title or something that everyone knows about.
Definitely.
Yeah. So it sounds like we're at the end of another show tonight. I want to thank you guys for coming along. Made the hour go much faster.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Engineer Wayne, back there. And this is, I guess, the end of another week. So thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.